Okay, so good evening. Tonight's topic is the 10th perek of Sefer Melachim, or the 10th perek of Book of 1 Kings, however we want to call it. If you remember, if we can just go back a bit, so we encountered Shlomo HaMelech back in Perek Gimel. And in Perek Gimel, Shlomo HaMelech had God appear to Shlomo in a nighttime dream, and God said to Shlomo, ask for whatever you want. And Shlomo begins with the appropriate introduction about how wonderful what you did with David was, with my father. And, right, then Shlomo says, by the way, please give me a heart to understand. Basically, Shlomo asked for the wisdom in order to judge the people. God was happy with that, the Pasuk says. And the Pasuk then says, listen, Shlomo, because you asked for wisdom, and you didn't ask for wealth, and you didn't ask to defeat your enemies, etc., so rather, what I'm going to do is I will give you a heart to understand, and what you did not ask for, I'll also give you. I'll give you osher and kavod. I give you wealth and honor. So effectively, the Pasuk says that Shlomo, you asked for wisdom, and therefore you'll get wisdom plus wealth plus honor. That was in Perek. That was in Perek Gimel. What?
The trifecta.
It's an awesome trick. Like, I don't know how you figured this out, but yeah, to get wealth, honor, wisdom, it's not bad. It's really not a bad deal. So we're going to talk about that. But the fact is, this perek really shows us the wisdom, the wealth, and the honor that Shlomo attained. That is all found in the perek Yud that we're going to learn tonight. And we will analyze it as we go on. But just like first in very broad strokes, Perek Yud begins telling us about the Queen of Sheba, who hears about Shlomo's wisdom. She comes to test him, etc. And Shlomo proves that he's like really smart. And that is Psukim Aleph through Tes. Right? Aleph through Yud tells us about how Shlomo proves his wisdom to the Queen of Sheba. So that's the wisdom dimension. And then, Psukim Yudalid and onwards speak about how much gold Shlomo HaMelech had and what he did with all of that gold. No? That is the wealth of Shlomo. And the very end of the Perek, Psukim Chaf Vav, until the end, it speaks about how Shlomo gathered chariots and horsemen, etc. Now, the chariots that Shlomo gathered were not for purposes of war. Shlomo did not have wars. And the horses that he's gathering are not for wars because he doesn't have wars. Rather, these are things that increase honor. So what we have is all the three dimensions that are mentioned in Perek Gimel. The wealth, the wisdom, and the honor all come to fruition here in Perek Yud. And one could read this perek as being a statement of, you know what, Shlomo, this is the fulfillment of what you asked for. This is good, right? You're amazing. Wealth, wisdom, honor, you got it all, right? It's a very upbeat, positive perek. That certainly is one way of interpreting it. But of course, on the other hand, we can interpret it not as being so positive. And we can see signs that Shlomo has, that the wisdom of Shlomo is in fact defective. And the wealth of Shlomo is in fact a failing, right? And the honor of Shlomo is undue honor. Those are the, that's the other approach. Now, let's go through the Bukim. And we'll make a few comments, particularly when it comes to the wisdom, and we'll try to show that maybe this wisdom isn't the amazing wisdom that we would like it to be. And these comments are mostly from Rav Alex Israel in his book, One King Split Into Two, whatever it's called. And let's go on. So, Pasuk Aleph. Malchus Shiva Shoma'at et Shema Shlomo L'Shem Hashem V'atavo L'Nasoso V'chidos. Right, the king of Sheba hears the fame of Shlomo. Now, there are two words that don't really belong in the Pasuk, which are the words L'Shem Hashem. No? She hears Shlomo's name, his fame, for the sake of God. What's going on, right, over here? What do those words "for the sake of God" indicate? And also, just in context, how did the queen of Sheba hear about Shlomo is unclear. Right? We're just thrown into it. The queen, by the way, where is Sheba? They say it's Ethiopia. I was never there. I don't know. The Daf Mikra Tanach assumes it's like some. It's in Ethiopia. Okay, great. So, Queen of Sheba hears about Shlomo's wisdom, L'Shem Hashem. Now, one possibility is that we could read this L'Shem Hashem as being very positive. Usually, when I say that someone acts L'Shem Hashem, that means that someone's acting for the sake of God. That's a very positive thing. And it's entirely possible to interpret that Shlomo's wisdom is for the sake of God. In other words, Shlomo is, I guess, spreading his knowledge to the far reaches of the world in order that people should recognize that there's a Borei Olam. And she hears about this, and she's inspired. But she comes to test him like a skeptic. She says, you know what, maybe we got to find out what's going on.
Freedom. Huh? Maybe he's got freedom of play. Maybe it's not real.
Maybe his wisdom is not all that they say it is. Now, the other interpretation of the pasuk could be a very similar idea, but there are two types of wisdom. There is natural wisdom, and then there is like the supernatural wisdom. The queen of Sheba hears that Shlomo's wisdom is godly wisdom, is something that's beyond nature. And therefore she comes to test him to see, is it true, or maybe his wisdom is natural. In other words, and Chazal say in a few places that the Queen of Sheba was known herself for being, I say herself, I admit, there is a funny Gemara in Bava Basra Tesvav where the Gemara says that the Queen of Sheba was a man. No? You heard this one?
No.
No, okay. They don't teach it to us in grade school. They go above a master.
Transgender is nothing new.
What?
Transgender is
nothing new. I don't know if we're saying it like that.
No, I think it's they can't deal with the idea that it's a queen, so they must be.
Right.
Oh, you must be a guy in disguise. You're too smart.
That type of thing. There is such a statement. There are other comments of Chazal that we'll talk about in a few minutes that are contradictory. It's pretty obvious in the Pesukim, and the Maharsha there on that Gemara raises the issue. In Bava Basra Tesvav, Maharsha says, read the Pesukim, it's a woman. Like, what's going on here? Right? That's his basic comment. So he gives, like, he enters the realm of heebie-jeebie. But
you could probably get at least a master's thesis out of
why would the Gemara want it? What would be the motivating factor to this? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is certainly striking. Now, the fact is, according to this version, what we're trying to say now is like this. The Queen of Sheba hears about Shlomo's tremendous wisdom. She hears that this wisdom is supernatural wisdom. And she herself is a woman, we'll say, of great intelligence. And she says, no, I'm going to test this guy out. Now, she knew that her wisdom was natural wisdom, was wisdom of sciences. And she comes to test Shlomo to see whether Shlomo's wisdom is actually supernatural or ordinary. This is the comment of the Abarbanel that the Malbim cites. I think there is some meaning to that comment. Yeah.
How, if she knows her wisdom is natural wisdom, so how is she capable of...
Well, I guess what she was trying to test him is, does he know stuff that I don't know?
Okay.
Right? If I've mastered all the... Well, I guess she's like a polymath. She knows everything there is to know. If I've mastered everything and you know something I don't know, so there are two possibilities. Either it's wrong, or... Right? Or you got something on me.
Right.
And that's really what's going on over here. Now, the end of the previous parak spoke about this boat that Shlomo had to go to Ophir to collect gold. It's entirely possible that the connection, we don't know where Ophir was, but it's probably somewhere on the coast of Africa where there is gold. They say in Somalia there's gold, is that true? I've never been there. Right?
I don't follow this stuff.
So, I think at this point, like, whatever, it's probably not a good place to go, but
was it ever?
At the same time, because this boat of Shlomo's traveling the world, so that's how Shlomo got well known, and the Queen of Sheba hears about this and she comes to test Shlomo b'chidos. Now, chidos are kind of riddles, no? She is testing him, apparently, not with straight-up information, but with the ability to discern things, the ability to understand properly, not just mastering plain textbook information. So far, so good. Let's go, Pasuk Beis. She comes to Yerushalayim. B'chayo kaved ma'od. She comes with a tremendous entourage, an army. She has camels that are carrying spices. She has a lot of gold and precious stones. And she comes to Shlomo and she tells him, Eis kol asher haya im levava. She tells him whatever she was thinking. And Shlomo tells her, Pasuk Gimel says, all of her words. And there is nothing that was hidden from the king that she did not, that he did not tell her. Now, there's obviously something missing in this kind of conversation. But apparently, she comes and she says things in half sentences, and she's trying to reveal her own thoughts, what's deep in her mind, and Shlomo picks up on it. No? Shlomo tells her, Kol asher haya im levava, right? There's nothing that's hidden from Shlomo. He tells her everything. Right? So this is the way Shlomo passes the test, effectively. Because Pasuk Dalet says that the Queen of Sheba sees all of Shlomo's wisdom, and she sees the house that he built, and she sees his table and all of his food and his slaves, etc. And, right, V'lohaya ba'od ruach, and she is like, She can't believe it. It's like a myth. How do they translate? Bahoya bo'od ruach. There's no more spirit in her. I guess she's dejected in some ways that she sees, oh my gosh, this guy's amazing. So she sees all of his food. She even sees the karbanos that he offers. That's all in Pasuk Hey. And v'lohaya ba'od ruach, she's really moved. Now, what's going on over here might be as follows. There are different types of knowledge and wisdom. There is generally a type of knowledge, and I think Rav Soloveitchik, in Lonely Man of Faith, when he talks about Adam 1 versus Adam 2. So the difference between Adam 1 and Adam 2 is Adam 1 is like, I imagine that he's like some of the professors I had in college. Like, totally spaced out. Like, I have no connection to the real world. I think deep thoughts all day. Right? In some ways. I'm a theoretical physicist. I'm a theoretical mathematician. Everything is theory. Adam 2 has the ability to take the theory and to implement it, no? Adam, too, can build stuff based on the knowledge that he had. Right? There's a difference between applied knowledge and, right, you know this probably a lot better than I do, right? There's a difference between applied knowledge and theoretical knowledge. Generally speaking, people do not have both. Generally speaking, people who are great philosophers and are thinking their deep thoughts all day don't have a good sense of how to, you know, I know one Jew. He was the Chazer of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. I met him one time. He's unbelievable. Rabbi Yoel Kahn. He's unbelievable. The man seriously does not know where he lives. He has no idea where his house is. But you sit there and you talk to him, and what he knows about Hasidus, he's totally spaced out. As spaced out as they come. But he knows everything about Hasidus, but he doesn't know how to cross the street. He doesn't know. Yeah. They have an... What?
Who takes care of him?
He has students. They walk with him and take care of her. Reb Chaim Kanievsky, they have in the biography of Rebbetzin Kanievsky that the one time she was like really sick and she needed a cup of tea, so she asked her husband to make her a cup of tea, and he makes her a cup of tea, and in the process he starts thinking and learning, and he's totally spaced out and the house almost burns down. No?
Yeah, you told me.
Again, I happen to find that story not particularly
edifying,
good word, but there is something about the type of person who is so engrossed in their own knowledge that practical things are not their cup of tea. That was actually good. Right? Now, the fact is, what the Queen of Sheba sees with Shlomo, let me just finish this thought, is that Shlomo was able to figure out whatever was in her mind, which is a type of, I would guess, analysis in the theoretical sort of way, right? But also, Shlomo has practical knowledge.
Yeah.
She sees his table. She sees his slaves. She sees the way they dress, right? She sees all of these things. And she says, okay, this proves to me that this fellow does not have ordinary knowledge. Because in the realm of ordinary knowledge, you got one, you got other. Either you're a theoretical physicist or you're an applied physicist. But very few people, is that correct? Is anyone like both into theoretical?
That's usually how
we're,
you'll have like either this
or that, right? So that is really what she sees, and therefore she recognizes that the knowledge that he has is godly knowledge. Again, going back to Perek Gimel, Hashem gave Shlomo a certain degree of knowledge. That's one point. The other point in this pasuk, then I'll take your comment in a second, Frida. The other point in this pasuk is that she sees that he has karbanos that he's bringing up to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, what she notices, and this is reading into it a little bit, sometimes you have people whose wisdom is in the secular realm, but don't understand anything about the realm of God. Spirituality doesn't speak to them. Shlomo HaMelech apparently, again, this is a very positive take on the situation, Shlomo HaMelech apparently has both. He has the karbanos that he brings up, and she sees that, and there's a certain wisdom, there's a certain rhyme and reason for the type of offerings that he brings, and that impresses her. In other words, he is a spiritual person who has spiritual wisdom, and he also has practical wisdom, and therefore she turns to Shlomo. She says, oh, this I heard about you is really true. I didn't believe it until I saw it myself, but you're amazing. Hosafta chochma v'tov. You have wisdom and goodness. Goodness is what people perceive as being nice. Wisdom is the theoretical. You have it all. Everything is great. Praise be your servant, right? God should be with you. You're a spiritual person. That's what she sees. This is a very upbeat interpretation of the first psukim. So far, so good?
Yep.
You have a comment?
Yeah, just a comment, just a few sentences back. We were talking about Adam 1 and Adam 2 and it's spaced out.
Yeah.
A somewhat toned down example of that, not so extreme, might be the difference between the Rosh Yeshiva and the community rabbi.
Sometimes, yeah.
Very theoretical, very, you know, it's all perfect, it's all intellectual, but he's not.
But the ivory tower really means that you don't interact with people. There is a difference between analyzing a question in theory when I do it in Gemara Shir,
yeah,
and analyzing a question when someone comes to me and says, what do I do about walking in front of security cameras on Shabbos? It's very different than the Shir that I give on it.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily that the conclusion is different, but yeah, it's a different way of analyzing, 100%. Now, this is the upbeat take. And she gives Shlomo gold, and she gives him spices, etc. And he has all of, right, Pasuk Yud says, Roba kabosem hahu od la rova shenas no malka shava la mal Shlomo. There has never been so much spice that was given to an individual like the Queen of Sheba gave to Shlomo. Now, then the Pasuk talks about Shlomo's wealth. It is possible, though, to read this like there's a connection, and it's a negative connection. In other words, here we have a person who God gives a gift of all the wisdom, and what he does with that wisdom is he accumulates wealth.
Now, I know Donald Trump thinks this is like the best thing ever. I'm smartest because I'm richer than you and you and you, right? We're not really sure whether he has that much money, but so Donald Trump wants us to believe. But if I use my wisdom to only accumulate wealth, that is not very good. And if I read the psukim, what she sees about Shlomo, she sees his table. She sees his slaves. She sees his clothing. She sees his sacrifices. And we saw from the psukim earlier, he's offering 1,000 sacrifices a day. What she sees is largesse. She sees opulence. And that's what she sees as his wisdom. Right? In other words, the wisdom... Now, again, this is also a negative indictment on the Queen of Sheba. That what she's impressed with is using your wisdom to accumulate wealth. That's what spoke to her. But it could be that, right, it's not about a balance of theoretical physics and applied physics, as it were, but it's more about she's impressed by his wealth, and her response is she gives him even more wealth.
Wasn't just a consulting fee?
A consulting fee, something, but maybe what's going on is that she's giving him the stuff that he likes. Wealthy guy, okay, I'll give you some more. And, right?
How much is enough?
I can't hear you?
What is he needed for, and how much is enough?
So what, that's, we don't know what you need it for. We don't know. You reach a certain point that you probably don't need this anymore. But the pasuk says in Mishlei, Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. It's a pasuk in Kohelos. I'm sorry. Ohev kesef lo yispa kesef. If you have a lot of money, you are never satisfied, and you keep on wanting more and more and more. And the king and Shlomo on pasuk Yigimel, he gives Queen of Sheba whatever she wanted, whatever she asked for, he gave her. Right? In other words, right, there's like a meeting of the minds or a meeting of the pockets. It's like a merger. And
yeah.
This is like the more negative take on the situation. That Shlomo's wisdom is to attain wealth, and now he has a partner with the Queen of Sheba. Now Chazal say something very negative about Shlomo. Chazal say, and Rashi quotes this on Pasuk Yud Gimel, I didn't print it out, but Rashi quotes that when Shlomo gave her whatever she wanted, it means that Shlomo slept with her, and eventually the product of that relationship was King Nebuchadnezzar, who destroyed the temple. Right? That's what, remember, the temple had just been built. The temple is going to be destroyed 410 years from now, or something, or 400 years from now. Now, that's a fascinating idea. In other words, this statement of Chazal is reading into the relationship between the Queen of Sheba, not just like an intellectual meeting of the minds, etc., but they're reading into it something very negative. Something very negative that reaped terrible punishment for the Jewish people. That the excess that Shlomo was using his wisdom for allowed him to be enticed to such an extent that look what happened. That is a comment of Rashi. Again, I don't have much to I don't have much more to add in terms of this, but obviously that statement of Chazal that Shlomo slept with the Queen of Sheba and then the Nebuchadnezzar was born implies that the Queen of Sheba is not a man. That's all I'll say. Yeah.
I just find it interesting that pasuk
the negative interpretation, right? When but again, maybe what she recognized is just to go back. She's testing Shlomo to see whether the type of wisdom that he has is natural wisdom or some godly wisdom. So it's godly wisdom, but it's being used in an improper way. So, but she does recognize clearly that it comes from God. You're right. That pasuk sounds very positive. I don't think you can ignore that. Okay, so these are the two explanations. Now just to move on in the Perek speaks about the amount of gold that he collected in a single year, right? Now, usually, how does a king get gold?
Taxation.
Correct?
Yeah.
Over here, is the gold coming because of taxation? It's not. Right? It says that Shlomo gets 666 kikar of gold. If we went back to the previous parak, Chiram gave Shlomo 120. Queen Sheba gave Shlomo another 120. That is in Pasuk Yud. She gives him 120. That's 240. And then there's a boat that comes from Oni Tarshish, that comes from Ophir. It's another 420. 420 plus 240 is 660. And we don't know where he got the other six. Right? But the fact is, Shlomo HaMelech is getting gold from the Queen of Sheba, from Hiram, from international alliances. Right? That's where the gold is coming from.
What's he giving him in return?
What?
What's he giving him in return? Selling off all the natural resources?
So, we spoke last week about how Shlomo now is giving the King Hiram some cities in the country, because he didn't have natural resources to pay for this excess of gold. That's the comment that we made last week. It doesn't say over here what he gave in return, but it's not from taxation. Okay? Now, why is this important? This is important as follows. There are three commandments that a king has. Three negative commandments. The positive command, have your own sefer Torah. We got that. We're not talking about that one. The negative commandments are lo yarbelo susim, lo yarbelo nashim, v'kesev v'zahav lo yarbelo ma'od. Don't have too many horses, don't have too much money, and don't have too many wives. No? That's what the Torah says about a king. Shlomo HaMelech has a ton of money. That's over here. The end of the perek speaks about how Shlomo is getting lots of horses from Egypt. Right? The Torah says, don't have lots of horses, so that you shouldn't go to Egypt. Shlomo is doing that. So it seems like he's 0 for 2. And we know Shlomo had 1,000 wives. He's 0 for 3. I wasn't there.
It's that Aaron. Okay.
But the fact is, the Pasuk is saying that Shlomo is 0 for 3 on these commandments.
Yeah.
That is the way the Yerushalmi takes it. Talmud Bavli, however, in Sanhedrin Chaf Aleph, the Gemara over there says that Shlomo violated the Isser of Lo Yarbelo Noshim and the Isser of Lo Yarbelo Susim. He had too many wives and too many horses. And the Gemara says that Shlomo was like too smart for himself. Because Shlomo said, since the Torah gives me reasons why not to do this, I will not succumb. I will not fall in. And that's why you shouldn't really give reasons. This goes against like our whole educational philosophy, doesn't it? Fine. But that's what the Gemara says. Now, the fact is, the Gemara never mentions that there is a violation of Kesef V'Zahav Lo Yarbelo Ma'od. The Gemara in Talmud Bavli never says that Shlomo violated not having too much money. Aye, he has a ton of money. So the Yad Ramah, the Ramah's Remeir Halevi Abu Lafia, he was a major opponent of the Rambam, no? In the Maimonidean controversy, if I'm not mistaken, he died in 1244. And what's his name? Beryl Septimus has the book about the Yad Ramah, about the Ramah. I forgot what his book is called, but it's Brown. Now, the Yad Ramah, his commentary in Sanhedrin, notes that the Isser to have too much money is an Isser not to collect money through taxes. But there's no prohibition for a king to have a lot of money if the money is given to him not through taxes. That's what the Yad Ramah comments. Now, effectively, the prohibitions of not having too many wives is because they shouldn't take you away from the service of God. Not having too many horses because we don't want you to become haughty, and etc. And not having too much money, the Torah doesn't really tell us the reason for it. It could be that's why it's not part of the Gemara's discussion, because the Gemara says that because the Torah gave the reason, that's why Shlomo violated. So it doesn't really tell me the reason of not having too much money. But the Ramah is saying that it only applies if you collect the money through taxes, which would seem to mean that the reason a king should not have too much money is because of the exploitation of power. If I am a king, and I can tax you to 90%, and I do that, that's exploitation, no? A king could do it technically, but that's abuse of power. The Ramah is saying that the reason not to have too much money is not to abuse power. The Yerushalmi, however, argues on the Bavli. And the Yerushalmi says that Shlomo was in violation of not having too much money. And that would mean that the reason not to have too much money is because of the gaiva involved. No? Why does the Torah, again, we're trying to figure out what Hashem meant. What was God thinking? He said that the king should not have too much money. It could be what Hashem is saying is, you know what, it's going to make you haughty. Right? You have a treasure house full of money, so of course it's going to go to your head.
Gee.
It's not because of exploitation, but it's because of what it will do to you. It's because it will make you haughty. That dispute seems to be the machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, whether Shlomo was in violation of Kesef V'Zahav Lo Yarba Lo Ma'od. Now, what does Shlomo do with all the money that he has? This brings us to the Kavod. Remember, we spoke about how Shlomo has wisdom, wealth, and honor. Right? Those are the three things in Perek Gimel, Psukim, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet. Pasuk Tes Zayin here. Vayas Hamelach Shlomo Masayim Tzina Zahav Shachut, 600. Each one weighed 600, etc. What is a tzina? How do they translate tzina? So tzina is a type of shield. No, how do? 200 targets of beaten gold, and then Pasuk Yud Zayin says, and he made 300 shields. Now a tzina. And they translate over here as a target. I'm not exactly sure where the target. I assume it's like, you have like the bullseye. I don't know why you would want something like that. You want your enemy to miss. But what is your translation?
The new JPS says shield.
Shield. But they have shields both in verse 16 and verse 17?
It's only 200 shields of beaten gold.
200 shields and gold. And what's verse 17? And 300
bucklers of beaten gold.
Bucklers? What's a buckler? It's also a type of shield. My understanding is that both the tzina and the magain are type of shields. The pasuk says ki magain v'tzina Hashem Elokim. It's a pasuk in Tehillim or something. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like shielded. That the world is here to shield us from the purity of the Rabbonu Shel Olam. If we'd be exposed to God's purity, we would be consumed in a second. But there are two different types of shields. This is the way Rashi learns. There's the shield that I hold. Then there's like the other shield, which is metal on three sides of me. Right? And you know what I'm talking about? It's like you walk around with like metal on three sides. That's one type of shield. If you do the mathematics over here, Pasuk Tes Zayin, the shield on three sides, the tzina, is 600 gold, and the other one is 300 is three mana, right? Three mana is 300. So it's much heavier because it goes on all three sides. That's one explanation. The other explanation, which is interesting, is in Mitsudos, for instance, the pasuk. Mitsudos says that it's also a type of shield, but it's a type of shield that is really a suit of armor. The tzina is a suit of armor. It's, you know, like if you go to the Met and you see the medieval knights, and how did anyone walk in those things? I have no idea. It's like me. But that's what it was. Fine. Now, what metal do you usually make shields out of? Do you usually make shields out of gold? Yes or no? Why not?
First of all, it's very expensive. Secondly, or firstly, it's too soft.
Too soft. Not only does Shlomo make shields out of gold, he makes shield out of Zahav Shachut. Zahav Shachut is a very, it's like almost slaughtered gold. By slaughtering, that means, again, some of the Mefarshim say that there's like a red component of the gold and a yellow component of the gold, and you can, just like when I slaughter an animal, I remove the red component. No? It bleeds. When you slaughter an animal.
Yeah, but what is that with gold?
So with the gold, apparently if you remove the red component of the gold, it becomes much softer. I'm not a goldsmith.
The thing is, like, 14 carat gold is dirtier than 24 carat.
I understand. The more pure the gold is, so they're removing some of the other things in the gold, it's pure gold. So not only is it gold, it's very soft gold. Now, usually you don't make shields out of very soft gold. So the Pasuk says, by the end of Pasuk Yizayin, that Shlomo puts these shields in Beis Yar HaLevanon, in that big home that he built, which was for like international relations. It had all the mirrors we spoke about. It had all those trees. It's like a very open place. A very decorative place. Effective.
What? And it's for decoration.
So these shields are for decoration. These shields are not for war. Shlomo had no wars, but he has golden shields. That means that the shields are here for covet. Shlomo has wisdom, he has wealth, and he has honor. The honor is that he has shields of gold, etc. Part of the honor of Shlomo is also Psukim Yudches and following, which is that Shlomo has a throne. Now, there is an abundant literature, particularly in the Midrashim on Megillas Esther, about the throne of Shlomo HaMelech. Achashverosh, right, was very into his throne. Right? The king sits, Al Kisei Malchuso Asher B'Shushan Habira. Right? That pasuk is like written a little bit backwards. You would say that the king sits in Shushan, and he sits on his throne. I mean, he sits on his throne, which is in Shushan. So the Medrash in Esther says like this, that Ahasuerus was jealous of the throne that Shlomo HaMelech had, and he decided to construct the throne for himself. So he hired workers who were in Shushan, and the workers in Shushan built this throne that's like a replica of Shlomo's throne. After it was built, though, they realized, like stupid workers, that, oh my gosh, you can't really move this thing. So the Medrash in Esther says that Al Kisei Malchuso Asher B'Shushan Havira, it was on his throne that was in Shushan. They made Shushan the capital in order to move it to this throne. That's right. You bring Mohammed to the mountain. So now, this throne of Shlomo HaMelech, the Midrashim, and actually Lewis Ginsburg in The Legends of the Jews has pages about the different things. Like Chazal say in this various Midrashim that they had like machines, that you'd step on one step and the machine would elevate you to the next one, and they have all these animals around and it's like doing the hokey pokey. I don't know what's going on there. Huh? Right. This throne of Shlomo had Shesh Malos Lakisei, had six steps. There's a curved seat on top. There are two yadot, two handles. So like many fancy thrones have like armrests. There are two armrests, right? And there are two lions that are next to the yadot, two big lions on top. And then there are 12 lions on each of the six steps. And then the Medrash speaks about how there are other animals, etc. And the Medrash says that there was someone who's called Paro Nechei, Paro the limper, because he came to visit Shlomo one time and one of the animals bit off his leg. Right? So we have this whole tradition about Shlomo HaMelech's throne making it like the most impressive throne. Obviously, this indicates the kavod, the honor that Shlomo is having. Is it good honor? Is it bad honor? I don't know. You know, you have to judge it yourself, but that's sort of what's going on. Now, there are Midrashim as follows about this throne of Shlomo.
This comes from the book Musar HaNeviim. There are six steps to the throne. That's what we mentioned. Shish Malos Kisei. The Avni Nezer has a famous tshuva about whether the son of a rabbi inherits his father's position. That's called Shish Malos Kisei. He discusses the fact that the Gemara says that monarchy is handed down from father to son, etc. So, to the extent that the rabbinate is like a monarch, so it gets handed down from father to son, and he analyzed, it's a really brilliant tshuva. It's called Shish Malos Makisei. That's the tshuva of the Avni Nezer. So the Medrash says on each of the steps they had a different pasuk that was written, which is a pasuk to tell the king what he should do to be king. Right? So one pasuk says, Lo tateh mishpat, don't distort justice. Lo takir panim, lo tikach shochad, lo tita ashera, etc. That is one version in the Medrash. But there's another version in the Medrash that has the six psukim, not about justice, but the six psukim are about a king in the role of a leader, not in the role of a judge. Remember, king as judge is a very important element. It says in these psukim on the throne, Lo yarbelo nashim is one, don't have too many wives. Don't. Then next one is Lo yarbelo susim, don't have too many horses. Next one is, right, Esav izahav lo yarbelo ma'od, right, don't have too much money. The fourth one is also about don't distort justice, etc. Now, effectively, I think what the Midrash is getting at is that the honor that Shlomo had, and he built this throne, even with all the safeguards put into place, at each step is supposed to represent something that he shouldn't violate, it was not successful. Right? Even though there's a pasuk, as it were, on each of the steps, nonetheless, Shlomo ended up violating them. Just to mention one more point, we know the Mishnah in Avos says that kina taivan kavod motzinas ha'adam min ha'olam. Jealousy, lust, and honor remove a person from the world. The three prohibitions for a king represent kina, taiva, and kavod. Lo yarbalo noshim is about taiva. Kavod is lo yarbalo susim. Horses represent kavod. And kina, the jealousy, very often we're jealous of those who have more money than we have. So that's kesef v'zohav lo yarbalo ma'od. So that is what's going on with the throne of Shlomo HaMelech. Now, the fascinating thing about the throne of Shlomo and Shlomo's wisdom, etc., is that it seems that the wisdom that was given to Shlomo is supposed to be the height, but the way we're trying to read some of the psukim over here, Shlomo misused that wisdom. But the goal of Melech HaMashiach is supposed to be the type of king that Shlomo should have been. Right? The pasuk says about Mashiach that Vaharicho Biras Elokim V'lo Lamar'e Einav Yishbot V'lo Lamishma Ozno. Right? That the Melech HaMashiach is going to judge based on Vaharicho Biras Elokim. Right? The Rambam and the Raiva discuss that maybe King Mashiach is going to judge just by smelling. Then he'll have a sense of like smelling who's honest and who's not. If you go back to the beginning of Shlomo, Shlomo's wisdom is reflected in things that are like not really halachic analysis, but oh, I know that you're the mother because of the compassion, etc. Right? That's not like rigorous halachic analysis. That's the type of wisdom that King Mashiach should have. So Shlomo HaMelech, in some ways, and there are statements in Chazal to this effect, that he could have been Mashiach, but because he got carried away with the wealth and with the honor, that's what, and he used his wisdom for the other things, that's what took him away, and the Mashiach that we're awaiting is the Mashiach who will return to what Shlomo was. So these are the basic points he wanted to make in terms of the prohibition of horses from Egypt. There's just very briefly Machlokas Rashi and the Ramban. Rashi assumes that the prohibition is only don't get horses from Egypt. The Ramban assumes
on the Ramban al-Hatorah and Parsha Shoftim says that there's really two prohibitions. There's one prohibition not to go to Egypt to get horses. There's another prohibition not to have too many horses on its own. The Ramban is like dividing. He's saying, you know what, there's an issur of having too many horses because of the arrogance involved. There's another dimension of not returning to Egypt because of the fact that Egypt is a decadent society, etc. So these are some of the comments. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. This was Perek Yud of Shoftim. Perek Yud of Melachim.